hello, hello, and welcome to a special Liberty Blue conversation. Joining the show today, good friend, gambling expert of the show, Matt Alber, and we are going to be taking a top-down view look at the league ahead of the trade deadline. There aren't a ton of blue-chip players ahead of the deadline, so I feel like we have a relatively firm grasp on who's actually good and who's isn't. As a starting point, how many teams would you say are in that top tier? You said before we started recording, you like to break them up into tier as opposed to ranking them 1 through 32. Where are you at so far as that top tier?
Yeah, so for me, it's three teams. It's Florida, and we've kind of seen why. They've been on an absolute tear. I think many people think they're probably the best in the league. Edmonton, I mean, they've just gone crazy since they brought in Knobloch. And then Dallas is the other team I have up there, too, especially after getting Tanev.
As far as Dallas, the thing I find interesting about them is we keep waiting for Ottinger to kind of get going, and we're all assuming he will at some point. Being that goaltending is so volatile, how do you bake that into your kind of, I don't want to say your system, because, you know, you're just ranking the teams how you feel about them, but how do you account for that such high variance, especially for a team that we feel is pretty good? Like, I think Dallas is really good, too. I know Andrew does as well.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that about goaltending, because it is just so volatile year to year, right? Like, just as a couple examples, like last year you saw Gustafson in Minnesota was just out of this world. And this year he was like one of the league's worst goalies in the first month or two. So it does change very quick. But I think at the same time, when you see someone like Ottinger who kind of has that track record, it's like you do kind of expect them to come back to form. And it's like, all right, maybe he won't be what he was in that series against Calgary 2 years ago, for example, right? Like maybe he'll just be good or very good instead of great. But even this year, when he's had like a very mediocre year, like he's still been okay. But for a team like Dallas, right, like even if he's just okay, the rest of that team is so elite that it's like I think they're a team that could get by and even like go pretty far with average goaltending, as opposed to obviously a team like the Rangers, which we can all kind of get into at some point. But like, even, yeah, he just, it's weird. He just never really has found his game so far this year. And like you said, like, I think we all kind of expect him to turn it on. But even if he's just kind of like this good goalie, they're just so good, even outside of that.
What about a team like the Vegas Golden Knights, who now they've lost 8 of their past 10? They're falling a little bit, but they're still such an elite team. I mean, they're rumored for Buchnevich. We talked about him on the show, the last episode for the trade deadline stuff. I mean, is this just like a rut for them? Are they just so like, hey, we're getting to the playoffs, so like these games don't matter? Or is this just kind of them falling off? Like, I don't think they're going to fall off the cliff, but what's their outlook looking like?
Yeah, in Vegas is interesting. And they're actually a team I'm kind of looking to buy on right now. I think it's just injuries for them is such a big part of it. Like, and you even kind of watch them play right now. Like last night they allowed 6 to Columbus. Like before that, they got smacked by Buffalo. It's like, they're just not defending anybody right now. And obviously this year, like they've gone through a lot of injuries on the back end. I know right now they're without Stone. I think they just got Eichel back last night. Like there are these big guys here, but at the same time, like, this is, like you said, obviously like a really good team that's kind of proved itself in the playoffs before. And I think you've kind of seen some of this in the past with like these veteran teams, like especially after a long run, like they do tend to struggle a little bit. Like things kind of obviously went like perfectly for them last spring. Like you're just going to have some things go against you, right? And obviously with them, like they've bit the injury bug. Like Aiden Hill started amazing. He's kind of come back down to earth a little bit. And it's like, I think that's the bigger concern about Vegas is like, okay, you won the cup last year because Aiden Hill just had like an incredible run. What if he doesn't do that again? And what if he is league average or even maybe a little bit worse? Like, are you able to go far, especially when you're looking at matchups with like the Kings, the Canucks, the Oilers, whoever it may be, just to get out of the Pacific out there? It's like, I don't know. They're very interesting to me. At the same time, it's like you kind of see what this roster is going to be in 6 weeks. And like you said, right, like maybe they bring in a Buchnevich or a Tarasenko or an Anthony Mantha or someone else that can kind of help beef up a little bit of scoring there. Like they do still have a really solid decor. And then obviously like you expect Hill to be in net. So I do think it's just a little bit of a rut for them. At the same time, like there definitely is some cause for concern, especially as they have started to get a little healthier on the back end. They're still just like, they're struggling to defend these like bottom tier teams. Obviously Columbus, I mentioned Buffalo. There was another one recently. I can't remember offhand right now. But it's just, I don't know. They're an interesting one for sure.
When we're accounting for the disparity between the quality and the conferences, how much of that are you accounting for in putting together how you feel about these teams? Because like you just mentioned, anybody in the West, you're probably going to have to go through some combination of, you know, Dallas, Edmonton, Vancouver, even Winnipeg. These teams that are all really good versus the East, you know, Florida, the Rangers. Then after that, I feel like there's a decent drop off to that next tier down of Toronto, Boston, even Carolina.
Yeah. I don't know, right? Because it is funny. The West is just, it has so many more good teams in it, like you said. But I think at the same time, like what that does for the East is it's so much more wide open.
Yeah.
And like you look down it, right? And I mean, just looking at this really quick, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have my 8th best team in the West as good as my 4th in the East. So it's like, I think there's so many of these teams, like would anyone really be shocked if the Bruins went to the Cup final? We can make Leafs jokes, but like if the Leafs made it to the Cup final, like, would that be shocking to anybody? Probably not. But at the same time, like you look out in the West and it's like, I have, Toronto and Vegas right around the same right now. And it's like the Knights are probably the 8th best team in the West, 7th or 8th, where it's like, you look out in the East, it's like they're better than I think the Bruins even at this point. So it's just the disparity between the conferences is nuts. At the same time, like I think that could make, it's going to make for an exciting playoffs in the East though. It's like you said, like the matchups that we're going to see, they may not be as high caliber as the ones in the West, but it's just so wide open. And especially kind of when you look at that wild card race, like we could mention a team like the Devils. Like if they were to get in, would it really be shocking if they were able to maybe give the Panthers a run, or if it's the Islanders, right? Like who, the Lightning, I know are down there, like even the Red Wings who have been playing pretty well, like would it really be shocking if they were able to kind of push one of these top tier teams? No, not really.
Toronto has terrible goaltending. You mentioned they have I don't trust Ilya Samsonov at all. I mean, he has like one good game or two good games, and then he has four or five where he's like, anybody else, please. But one other team that has terrible goaltending, and you mentioned, is the Devils, who they just fired Lindy Ruff. Travis Green is now their head coach, and he starts off with benching Nemec and still putting Holtz on the fourth line for reasons. They have to essentially win 16 of their next 21 just to make the playoffs. I think this was too late of a change. Do you agree?
Yeah, I don't think they have much of a chance to get in at this point. I think what is still in the back of people's minds, mine included, is if, and at this point, I think it's too late, like you said, if they were to have gotten a goalie, and let's say it was 3 weeks ago and they pulled that trigger on the Markstrom trade or whatever, right? Like, that's a team that scares the crap out of me, right? Because, like, their 5-on-5 numbers have been really good all year. Like, they don't really have holes in their lineup too much. Obviously, like they miss Dougie Hamilton a lot. And they've had the injury bug kind of hit them after like last year, everything seemed to go right. They just can't get a save. And like, while they're controlling so much play, like what I keep saying is they've been goalied on both ends of the ice all year. It's like every night you look at it, right? And it's like the Anaheim game the other night's a perfect example. Like they dominated that game against the Ducks. Like that should probably have been a 5-2 win or something, right? And instead, like, what was his name? Dostal plays incredible and they lose. I want to say it was 4-2. I could be wrong on that. But they also can't get a save. And it's like, they just keep running out. Like Dawes has been, okay. Like Schmid kind of fell off the face of the earth. I don't even know what happened to Vanacek. Like he was one of the worst goalies in the league all year. It's like, they just, teams that struggle like that on both sides of goaltending are just never going to have success. But just, I guess, go into the Devils a little more. Like, I guess it is funny, kind of. The Devils almost remind me a little bit of kind of the situation the Rangers were in last year, right? So it's like, and stay with me for a second. So the Rangers make that run in 2022 that no one is really expecting and that we frankly didn't really deserve to go as far as we did. That just totally raised the bar on everyone's expectations, right? Like that going into the year, that was like, all right, make the playoffs, good, maybe win a round. Like when we beat Pittsburgh in that first round, like the season was a success. They could have gotten swept in round two and everyone would have been like, you know what? That was a successful year. Like we're kind of coming out of a rebuild. Awesome job. And then they win that next round against Carolina and they push Tampa. And it's like, all right, maybe this team's actually a cup contender. They realistically weren't kind of looking at it. But that bar of expectations just goes so much higher to where that next year, last year for them, the expectations were going to be impossible to live up to. It was pretty much make it back to the conference final, if not go to the Stanley Cup final, or the season was a failure. And say what we want about Gerard Gallant, but he's kind of what paid for that, right? Like, to me, the expectations were never going to be overly realistic. The Devils, I'm kind of seeing as a very similar trajectory at that point, right? Like, they were going through, obviously, a long rebuild. Last year, everything went right. They, frankly, went farther than they probably deserved to. Kind of everything bounced their way. And it did the same kind of thing. It kind of raised the bar from, okay, instead of a team that's, like, happy to make the playoffs, maybe win a round or two. I mean, and obviously, the season's been a big disappointment for them. But I think a lot of their fan base kind of went into this year with the expectations of, okay, we're a legit top cup contender. And you even saw that kind of coming into the year with like betting markets and everything kind of had them up there. But at the same time, like after a jump, like they took, I want to say they had 72 points 2 years ago. After making that kind of jump, it's just hard to take yet another big step immediately after that. And I think you're kind of seeing like the difference between rebuild and playoffs versus playoffs to cup is just, the differences are massive, right? So it's like, I do see a lot of kind of that expectation management going on here with the Devils that I kind of saw with the Rangers last year, where it's like, okay, I think they're going to be someone that next year probably bounces back. But like I said, at the same time, like so much of it has just been goaltending. Like I can't even look at it and say they've played overly bad this year because I don't think they have. They need to find someone who can make a save for them right now.
I mean, they've been trying to do that since Corey Schneider got the second hip surgery, and that was when I was still in high school, and I'm 26 now. So that's a real issue for the Devils. Speaking of the Devils and the idea of expectations and building it out, how much do you account for playoff experience mattering? Because I feel like that's general hockey wisdom amongst the hockey men, that part of getting to that contender level is having those traumatic experiences. Do you feel like there's a certain level of value in that, or is it, you know, just a handful of guys that really need that?
So I think I'm in the middle of where like you have the traditional hockey people talk about it versus like the best, just put the best team together. And if they're all 22 years old, so be it. I do think it does matter to a degree. And I don't know how many examples we need to see of these super elite teams kind of in their first long run, go far, not win at all. And then they add these things and they add these pieces that just you wouldn't even think about or wouldn't care about, don't seem like a big deal, and they make that run. Like Tampa Bay, right? Like they had that record setting season. They scored, I don't even know how many goals that year. Like I want to say that was the year Kucherov won the Hart too. Then they go out and they add like these third and fourth line guys to the exact same core essentially. It's like now they kind of get them over the hump. Colorado, same thing. They had that great year. I think a lot of people thought they were actually going to win that bubble year. And then certainly that year after when they lost to Vegas, they do that. They come back. They add Josh Manson. I want to say that was when they brought in Lehkonen. They kind of add these depth pieces, and then they get over that hump. Vegas, same thing. Great team during the bubble. Great team after the bubble. Fall short. Come back. They kind of beef up the back end they had there, and then they go win it all. So, like, I do think it matters to a degree. At the same time, like, I think the traditional hockey media certainly overblows it, but I do think there are a lot of people that just completely blow it off, and I don't think it's worth nothing, right? Like I do think it's worth something, and I don't know exactly what that intangible is, but I do think it's worth something to at least having been there. But I think more so it's like you can make a far run, I feel like, just based on your top players, but I don't think you can get over that hump until you're able to actually build a much deeper team, which I think is what we see again and again. And I think that's kind of what goes hand in hand with like playoff experience and kind of putting that roster together.
Speaking of building a deep team, the Carolina Hurricanes are one of the strangest franchises, I think, in all of sports, where they're always good, but they're never great. for some reason. Like they never trade for that difference maker of a player. They were in the Elias Pettersson trade talks before he signed the extension. I have that on good authority that they were having conversations. But what is the future of this team? Because their GM never goes for it all the way. They're always really good. Their underlying metrics are always fantastic, and yet they never have that one guy that can come in and dominate a game. What's their outlook? What's their plan?
Yeah, so it's funny. Every time I talk about the Canes, I say they might be the most mad team in the entire league. So I think the two things that we've seen consistently beat the Canes in the playoffs again and again, just with every team that's knocked them out, it's top-end scoring talent and it's elite goaltending. And you know what? That's going to beat a lot of teams, obviously, but especially the way they play, that's just puck control. They will generally get a lot of chances. Are they always the highest-end chances? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But I think those are the two things that they've often lacked, right? Is they've kind of lacked that offensive difference maker, like you said. And then they've lacked elite goaltending at times. Obviously, a couple of years ago, it was because of injuries. And often it has been because of injuries. Like, they lost Svechnikov last year, too. But, like, just that style of play, they've been susceptible to teams like the Rangers a couple of years ago. Just when you have all these top-end offensive players and you have Igor back in net, like, that style plays right into it. You saw them lose to the Bruins, I think, twice. The same kind of thing. They had Pastrnak, Bergeron, Marchand. And that was, I think, back when they had Tuukka Rask still, is when they lost to them. I think they actually lost to them back-to-back years, now that I think about it. Like, Florida last year, same thing. Bobrovsky, and then they had Tkachuk up front. They had Verhaeghe up front. Like, you have all those guys up there. And it's like, I think that when you look at it is probably their whole, right? Is that they're going to be dominant against most of the league. Because when they're going to play an average team and you're going to control 60% of the chances and you're just going to have the puck the whole game, like, you're going to beat all of these middle and bottom tier teams. But when you go against these top teams that kind of have, okay, they're deep and they can control play, but they also have these top end scorers and they have these top end goalies, like, I think that's just kind of their issue that they're going to run up against. And it's why, like, when I look at Carolina, I think, and even this year, they've gotten pretty good goaltending. They just need another difference maker to score up front. So it's like, I think obviously they were connected to Tarasenko for a while, right? Like, somebody like him, I think, would be a great fit. Like, obviously they've been rumored to Jake Guentzel for a while now. Like, I think that's the exact kind of player that they need up there. Like, they need a difference maker to help score some goals, because obviously they struggled to do that against Florida last year and the Rangers the year before and Boston the years before. That's kind of how I see Carolina, is they're just so matchup dependent.
Speaking of the idea of high-end talent, when you're putting together kind of like your mental checklist of what a contender looks like, what benchmark type of players? I'm not saying like specifics, but, you know, like, are we talking point per game players, you know, like an 80-point defenseman, elite goaltending? What in your mind kind of sets a team apart and puts them in that upper tier when you're putting together a checklist?
Yeah, so I think I value the top players less than others do. But I also think I value like a fourth line less than others do too. I think where you inevitably like see these teams that go really far is that lines 1 through 3 are often interchangeable. But also they have really strong depth on the back end is the other part. Like you're not seeing these teams with like third pairs to get sheltered in generally go very far. But at the same time, like you look at Vegas last year, like they could just roll the top three lines and you weren't having much of a drop off at all. Like Tampa was the same thing. Like they finally kind of got over that hump when they put together that second line, they put together that strong third line. So I think when I look at some of these teams, like, okay, obviously like Edmonton has the best top three of anybody, I think we'll say, right? Like, except for maybe Toronto, like those two would probably go head to head for the best top line. But I don't know how many years we need to see that those teams just, unless you have the depth behind it, like it just doesn't work, right? And it's like, in theory, you'd love to see like McDavid obviously in a cup final, like Austin Matthews in a cup final. But I don't know how many times we have to see that the teams that are deep and the teams that can just roll their top three forward lines pretty consistently and roll any deep pair and kind of have success with that go far. Like, I think that's what I look at more than anything, is like, just not looking for a massive drop off in the lineup.
The Winnipeg Jets are the one of the best teams in the entire league. They are have been on a roll the entire season. Connor Hellebuck is on some kind of heater. We got to test this man. I mean, he's been absolutely fantastic all year. I would have to imagine they're going to be active at the deadline. Could they be the team that comes out of the West? Like, there's so many good teams that are going to be fighting to the death out there. You got Dallas, you got Colorado, you got Vancouver, you got Edmonton, Vegas. Like, there's so many good teams out there. One of them has to make it out there. Is there a real possibility that Winnipeg is actually the team that comes out on top?
I think there could be. Their issue is going to be, right? Like, I think they're the team that I look at and say, all right, like, who is it really important wins their division? I think they're probably the team I say it matters the most for. And I've kind of mentioned this before with the Rangers, like, I don't think it really matters that much if the Rangers win the division this year. Just kind of you look at, like, who those matchups would be in the first round. Like, it could be the difference between Philly and Detroit. It just isn't that big. Like, for them, like, not having to go through both Colorado and Dallas is just so important. Obviously Hellebuck's been unreal, but kind of when you look at it, right, like, even dropping down into that two spot and having to play both versus staying in the one, and you're probably playing, like, in LA, maybe Nashville. Like, I just see the difference between those two teams being pretty big. But at the same time, like, you have Connor Hellebuck, you're going to have a shot. And they kind of fit a very similar mold to kind of like what the Rangers have had, right? Like, they'll have an elite goaltender. They'll get great goaltending every night. You know that. Like, they're playing terrific team defense. I think they're maybe still short one defenseman that they may go look to add. And then they have high-end offensive players, right? Like, they got Connor, Scheifele, Ehlers, Iafallo. Like, Lowry's having a good year. Like, Vlardy's been playing well. So it's like they do kind of have that mold up front. I guess my concern for them just is depth as I look at it, kind of especially on the back end, because, like, I mean, obviously Morrissey's a stud, but after that, like, there is a pretty decent drop off. So I certainly thought that they actually might be in the market for somebody like a Tanev. Like, I don't think they're going to end up getting Hanifin, but I'm sure they're kind of looking at it. And it's like, I think they have the team to maybe put together a run, but I think they have to win the division to really have much of a shot, because I don't think they get by both the Avs and the Stars.
You mentioned the trade market, and we're a couple days away from the deadline. Other than the Gensel and Buchnevich tier of forward, do you think there's anybody that's going to move in the next few days that's a real, like, somebody we have to take note of when we're talking about the tiers that these teams are in?
I think it more so, a lot of times with these trades, comes down to the fit. And I don't even know how many times we've seen just, like, a big name go and do nothing. Like, we all remember Eric Staal years ago, right? Like, we don't need to kind of go down that road. But I think I look at somebody like an Anthony Mantha, for example, and I think there are a few fits that are just terrific for him. The Rangers on obviously being one of them. But Florida, I think, like, he'd be a great fit when they need a little bit more forward depth. Like, he'd probably be a third line winger for them. And that scares me, because, like, that kind of really completes their top nine. At the same time, if he goes somewhere like Boston, like, that doesn't really move the needle much for me, right? So I think it's a lot of times just, like, the fit with this stuff. And when we've been looking about the Rangers, like, obviously they were linked to Lindholm for a while. And, like, I'm a big Lindholm fan. But as you kind of started to think more about it, if the Rangers were going to get Lindholm, you're not putting him on the top power play. He's probably not going to be on your top penalty kill. And he's going to be playing on the third line, most likely. Like, I don't think they'd put him top line right wing. And he'd be on the third line. It's like, you're trading for a guy like that. Yeah, great player. But if you're not really able to put him in the right spot, I don't think it necessarily matters that much. And it's like, I think one of the ones that we're just seeing constantly out there is Hanifin to Tampa Bay. And I think obviously, like, with Sergachev going down, like, that makes a lot of sense. But that's just really kind of the way I look at these, is like, all right, not just what player went where, but, like, all right, what is the fit like? How are they using it? Like, you've seen Monahan. I think he's not as good of a player as Lindholm, but he's had so much success since going to Winnipeg. And it's like, it really is the fit a lot of times for these guys. Like, you saw Barbashev last year. Like, nobody really blinked an eye when Barbashev went to Vegas, right? And he was just such a seamless fit on that line with Eichel. And I forget who the other wing was. I think Marchessault. And it really is about the fit more than anything else for me.
The Edmonton Oilers are just a strange team because for half the season, they couldn't pay for a single save. They lost every game 9-8, essentially. And they fired their head coach, and it was a disaster fire. And then they bring in Chris Knobloch, who coached the Hartford Wolfpack, and now they've essentially, I don't know what kind of magic voodoo he's put on his goaltending, but now they're making saves again, and now they're winning games. What a surprise. When it comes to the playoffs, we've seen the Oilers have good goaltending at times. We've seen the Oilers have miserable goaltending at times come playoff time. McDavid, Draisaitl, I mean, this is a deep team. Ekholm was a great addition last season, but when the time comes, do you trust the Edmonton goaltending to make a save?
Oh boy, tough questions. I don't know. Again, I think I'm kind of in the middle of what a lot of people think on this. Like, I am higher on Skinner than I think a lot of people are. Like, you see a lot of jokes kind of making fun of Stuart Skinner, saying like they'll never take Edmonton seriously with Stuart Skinner. He's 25 years old. Like, he was a rookie last year. Like, it's not like this is a guy that's been around for 5-6 years and we've seen kind of fall apart in the playoffs again and again. So I think I look at it right now and I say, yeah, like, he's been really good and I think he could keep it up. I think what scares me maybe about Edmonton is just the same thing we've seen year after year. It's they're going to get carried by the top six. They're going to get carried by the power play. But in the playoffs, when you see less power plays, it matters less, frankly. So it's like, I think they're maybe a little weak back on defense, which probably means they're going to get a few more chances kind of against them. Do I trust Stuart Skinner to make a big save? I think I do. I think the bigger issue for Edmonton is, are they going to be able to get contributions outside of the top 7-8 players on the roster? And I think that's almost been the bigger issue for them come playoff time, rather than like, can they get a save? Is can they get something after McDavid, after Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, Hyman? Is just what does that next tier of their team kind of contribute?
Shifting gears towards the Rangers-centric perspective here, I think the thing I find most interesting about the names they've been linked to, as opposed to the individual guys, like, I know the Wennberg stuff is really hot at the moment, and they're still linked to Vetrano. Adding those types of guys who are more of the ancillary, auxiliary, supporting type pieces, as opposed to going after names like they did last year, I think that tells me the Rangers think the core is good enough. It's just they need the right supporting cast to get it out of them. At what point, how many playoff runs do you think you need before you can say definitively this group of guys isn't it? Like, you know, we talked about it in regards to the Leafs before, the Oilers, and that's not to say you can't win with immense star power like the Oilers and the Leafs have, but after so many permutations of what's around those guys, how many times do you think, at what point is it, okay, we need to reconfigure our core?
So I think when you kind of look at their situation, I think the date kind of shows itself, right? And I think for a lot of us, we see it as like they have this year, they have next year, and then the team's going to start looking a hell of a lot different. I think the core, honestly, is good enough if they have the right supporting cast. I think, first of all, if you have Igor, you're going to have a shot. You have two or three other elite players out there in Fox and Panera, and we can say what we want about Zibanejad, like the talent's there. You look at it, obviously 2 years ago, they went farther than they deserved to. That was not a team that deserved to be where they were even. But they got better. They brought in Trocheck, right? Like they did kind of help beef up the team a little bit going into last year. And then obviously last year at the deadline, like, they went after the names. They didn't go after the players. And I think we all kind of hated those deals, especially the Kane one when it happened, just being that he's not what he was 8-9 years ago. But I think maybe they learned a lesson from that kind of going into this year, right? Is like, okay, like, we need to go out and actually get better players, not necessarily better names. And I think the thing that Chris Drury did over the summer, and I was very critical of the summer, but I think the thing that he did that I like is, they've brought in so many guys that they could try to kind of help that bottom six that has really struggled. And obviously a lot of these names haven't worked, but like Nick Bonino was here for a while. Like obviously VC kind of has been playing well and they kept him around. Like Pitlick was in there, not back anymore. They brought in so many guys to try. That kind of shows that he's learned like, okay, our top six probably isn't going to change a whole lot, even to a lesser degree, the top nine. But I think I do agree with him that it's good enough just if they have the right supporting cast. Because part of the problem, especially last year, was like, obviously, like they didn't score. But at the same time, that fourth line would just get pillaged in their own end. And you kind of saw that in the playoffs, too. And it's like, if Igor didn't play out of his mind, that series isn't even going as long as it did, frankly. Yeah, I mean, obviously the clock's kind of running low here, like on this group, like after next year, like the cap's just not going to allow for them to kind of keep everybody together. But I think to a degree, your hands are also tied. Is like, you're obviously not going to sell out of this group. Like you have a lot of these guys that are in their primes right now. So I think they're kind of in the right spot of like, okay, we at least have to give this core a shot. Like we know they can make a run. And what I said after they lost to the Devils last year was, that to me was the worst matchup for the Rangers in the entire conference. And I still now even think if they get by the Devils, there's a very good chance they make the final last year. Like I've obviously loved our matchup against Carolina for a long time now. And then you get to the other side and Florida last year did not scare me the way Florida this year does, to be honest with you. So it's like, I think that they had a very good chance to go far. But the perception is obviously that the 2022 Rangers were better than the 2023 Rangers. I don't think that's true at all. So it's like, I think just kind of the perception can change so drastically just based on one or two games, right? Like they win that game seven. Okay. Maybe they go on to beat Carolina and then the seasons look totally different. I think they have the talent there. I think the core group is right. They just need to fill it with the right guys. So obviously the way we look at it right now is like they've had one good line for the last 3 months, something like that. And it's like you're obviously not going to win a Stanley Cup if your number one center doesn't score an even strength goal since Christmas. Like that's just not going to happen. But I think there are a lot of guys out there that you look at that could help to jumpstart that. So I do think for them especially, like the pieces are out there. Because like I mentioned depth, right? Like I do see if they add a few pieces, the depth kind of gets put into place, right? Like I think if they end up getting that top line winger, whether it is Vetrano, I secretly hope it's not, or it's Mantha or it's Eberle or whoever it is, right? Like, okay, you're pushing Kako back down to the third line. And now that third line suddenly looks really strong, like especially if they do add an Alex Wennberg. That third line of Cooley, Wennberg, and Kako suddenly looks really good, right? And now it's like, all right, now you're pushing Brodzinski down to the fourth line. So it's like, now your fourth line looks pretty good too. I'm already a fan of their decor this year as badly as Keandre Miller's played this year. But it's like, you do see the pieces that are there and you do see a pretty complete roster at that point. So there's definitely like a lot for them to do, but you see the pieces there.
Do the Rangers have a comfortability problem? Because, and Nick and I have talked about this, where you mentioned Mika Zibanejad has now gone 29 games without a 5-on-5 goal. He's still on the first line with Kreider. That's never changing. Lindgren has fallen off a cliff this year defensively. And I mean, offensively, he's never been that great, but he just hasn't been good at all this year with Fox. He's staying on that top pair. Trouba and Miller have one good game followed by four bad games, and they just continue to stay together because that's what the guys want. That's what they get. Do the Rangers have a problem with letting guys dictate who they play with because they're comfortable with them, as opposed to, hey, this is not working, let's move things around because whatever we're doing now is not it?
I think maybe to a point, I don't know if it's necessarily a comfortability issue. I think it's almost a, what else are you going to do issue, right? Like, so you kind of mentioned Kreider and Zibanejad. It's like, okay, say you did want to break them up. What is the change that you're going to make there? And I think in past years, like you would talk about moving Panarin up. You're not touching that second line. Like you're just not, right? And it's like, okay, maybe you even give them more ice time than the top one. But what's the change that you would make? Like, would you're not putting Will Cooley up there over Kreider. Like, that's just not something you're going to do. I think defense is a little different. Like, I think for a while, the change that you thought they might make, and I think you got to leave Fox and Lindgren together. Like, they've just shown it for so long, as kind of bad as he's looked this year. Like, I think you come playoff time and, like, you want to see Fox with Lindgren. I think everyone kind of, like, at least understands that to a degree. But I think the change that would have made sense is just swapping the bottom two on the right side. It's just swapping Schneider and Trouba and seeing if that maybe kind of helps to change things up a bit. But the other one that you kind of saw a little bit was you saw Fox with Gustafson. And I think that's maybe the other one that you think about. I don't know if it's a comfortability issue or not. I just think it's kind of like you've seen these guys have such a track record of playing decently well together, Miller and Trouba kind of aside. It's like, I don't know. It is tough to look at, but I don't, like, when I look at it, I don't think that swapping, let's say it's Lindgren and Gus, you swap, for example, right? Like, I don't know if that's necessarily the answer. And maybe it is in certain situations, right? Like, I think, like, if you're protecting a lead or something, like, yeah, I'd like to see Lindgren and Schneider on the ice, maybe, right? But I don't know if that's necessarily the issue or not, to be honest with you.
As far as the deadline, you mentioned you don't really want Vetrano because probably the price, frankly, based on what he is. Other than Mantha, who you mentioned previously, who I agree with you. Mantha is interesting. He's big. He's fast in a straight line. He's got a little bit of a snarl to his game that the Rangers' good players just frankly don't have. Who does interest you that's reportedly available?
Yeah, so the other one that I'm interested in would be Eberle. So I think when I look at just kind of sticking to that top line, like what I've kind of looked at with that is, all right, what, because it's been the same issue the Rangers have had for since Buchnevich, right? Like they've just kind of been unable to really find guys that fit that spot. The best one obviously being Vetrano. The price is getting high on him, obviously. But I look at it and I say, all right, what do these players that have worked well up there generally have in common? Kind of going back to Buchnevich, and you kind of mentioned Mantha. He's big. He's fast. He plays with an edge. You know who else did that? Pavel Buchnevich. You know who else is also big and fast? Kaapo Kakko has played pretty well with that line for a lot of stretches. So when I look at it, like I'm looking for some of those traits. The one that interests me in Eberle is it would help him control more of play. Like he's a pretty solid play driver to where Vetrano really isn't. So my issue with Vetrano, I guess, is like, okay, maybe you put a high volume shooter, like he's obviously having a great shooting percentage here. I see that very Vladimir Tarasenko like, right? Where it could be great if he shoots 22%, but if he's shooting 6%, it's gonna look like a complete disaster. So I think if I'm looking at it like I want more of a play driver on that line than I necessarily do like a high shooting guy, because at some point, like you need to be able to rely on someone like Zibanejad to score goals. And especially at 5-on-5, like it has to turn at some point. Like, it's not like they're getting pillaged in their end every single night is the other issue of it. It's like, I think at some point, like there will be a little regression coming, but you're not going to win a Stanley Cup if you're not getting something out of your top players. So I think when you look at it, you shouldn't even look at it from the standpoint of, all right, how do we get Zibanejad going? It's okay, Zibanejad has to pick it up or we're not going to win, period. So assuming he does a little bit, what do we need to make that a more complete line? And I think it's someone to help give Zibanejad and Kreider a little bit more chances. So yeah, the two I look at that top line and say I'd really like are definitely Mantha and Eberle.
We talked about it on the show where no matter who you bring to the table at this point, it's all up to the people that are already here. Like Zibanejad has to score 5-on-5, Kreider has to score 5-on-5, Trouba and Miller have to be better at as a defensive pairing because that has not been good for years now. Trocheck has been phenomenal. You have Cooley who scored last night. He's got 11 goals. Like he's been really good all year. Even the behemoths of Rempe and Edstrom, like they've far, I feel like, exceeded expectations so far relative to what they've been expected to do over these past however many games that they've been playing. all of these additional guys are great. I would love to, you know, Wennberg is going to be better for the Rangers on that third line than what they currently have. May, you know, Eberle would be great on that first line, but ultimately, no matter who they bring in, all of this doesn't matter if the guys that are currently here don't step up to the plate.
Yeah, no, I mean, 100%. And it's like, I mean, obviously the biggest one we just keep mentioning is Mika. Like, he has to do something 5-on-5. I just, like, I look at roster construction, and like I touched on earlier, for the playoffs, and it's just, I'm looking at how, what do we need to do to make it so that the drop off from line one to line three is as minimal as possible? And like, we're pretty certain at this point that it's going to be two pieces, right? But once you do that, your fourth line suddenly becomes Jimmy Vesey, Goodrow, and Brodzinski. And that's a hell of a lot better than it's been at any point during this year. And it's like, yeah, you're going to need that second D pair to be better. You're going to need Mika to be better. You're going to need some scoring from that third line, whoever it ends up being. We kind of have no idea at this point. But it's like, you do at least kind of see that the pieces may fall into place to kind of have a much better, deeper lineup than they've currently had at any point this year. But yeah, I mean, you're going, like, you saw it, you've seen Igor turn it around. Like, I don't think any of us were ever truly worried about what that would be. I think we generally feel okay about Lindgren, especially as he gets closer to the playoffs. Like, I know I at least personally do. Keandre Miller is the big issue for me, honestly, is that that's kind of the one that I am starting to get worried about at this point. It's not even Trouba, who I think has actually had a pretty good year. Keandre's just kind of fallen off the face of the earth this year. And it's like, I don't know how far you can go if supposedly your third best defenseman is just not playing well at all.
He's been very volatile. That's the thing about the Trouba-Miller pair, the way they play. It's very high leverage. They will step up in the offensive zone and look for that loose puck to generate a chance, but that generally leaves the other guy by themselves if the rush goes back the other way, or if Trouba steps up in the neutral zone, that leaves Miller back. So they're really high leverage, and when it's worked, it's been great. I mean, part of why they went as far as they did in 21-22 was that Miller looked like a guy that he was going to be dependable. So that's really something I've found interesting, and we've talked about this a lot, and I forgot who brought it up during one of the national games. I think it was during the intermission of the Flyers game when they two Saturdays ago, but teams generally don't go that far when they have a lot of rookies in their lineup, and that kind of leads me to believe that Rempe and Edstrom won't be here past Friday. Where do you think the deepening of the lineup, and you've mentioned that a few times, the idea of it's not just bringing in Wennberg or whomstever, it's also we're getting guys out of the lineup and making the lineup deeper. How important do you feel that is for this group in particular? Because they've really leaned on the top nine over the last few weeks. I mean, Rempe and Edstrom are playing, you know, 6-7 minutes a game and double shifting Gaudreau here and there. But how important is that with managing the bench and Laviolette feeling comfortable ultimately? You know, the Kako Cooley line, they don't get a lot of shifts late in the game, even though that's arguably their best defensive line.
Yeah, and I think there's two parts to it. So I think it's, yes, you want to help deepen the lineup a little bit, and obviously bringing in pieces does that. But it's also about maybe pushing guys down out of spots that they're playing up to already be in, right? Like, I don't think Kaapo Kakko right now is a first-line NHL player. You bring in someone to put on that line, he's going to jump to your third line. He's more than good enough to be a third-line NHL player and be a very productive one down there. Like, right now, Brodzinski's been your third line center, and he's had a good year. Is he a number three center on a Stanley Cup team? I don't personally believe so, unless you have like Connor McDavid and his six twin brothers ahead of him. But it's like you push him down to a fourth line center or a fourth line wing. Like, yeah, that's a much better fit, I think. So, yeah, when I look at deepening it, like, yeah, it's great to bring in a Wennberg. It's great to bring in an Eberle or a Mantha, or I don't think it ends up being Gensel, but I keep seeing his name pop up. Yeah, it's great bringing those guys in, but that's about both getting more production out of those lines up there, but also being able to put guys in positions they may be a little more comfortable with down the lineup.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where, ah, man, I would love a Gensel. A Gensel would just really make the Rangers so much more dangerous. I would like that, because you take a look at what they did last year with Kane, like the hope, at least as far as I know, is Patrick Kane would just revitalize his, he would look as well as he did 10 years ago on one hip for some reason. And he would score 40 points in 10 games and they would win it all. But Jake Ensel is somebody that can actually do that now. Would he score 40 points in 10 games? I mean, maybe in NHL 24, but maybe not in real life. But yeah. That, like, he is a dynamic first line winger that would really, really make the Rangers one of the scariest teams in the league, if not the scariest team. Whether or not Dubas and the Penguins actually want to go and help the Rangers, I don't know if that's going to happen. But Wennberg is great. A lot of these ancillary players could be fine. But we talked about it with Carolina, where they don't have that guy that can just come in, change the course of a game, because, you know, like Tkachuk in Florida, where he turns around, he says, all right, this game is ours. I'll do it. No one else is going to do it. I'll do it. Rangers don't have that guy. Like, Jake Ensel would be awesome because he would be that guy. So, like, that.
I would argue it's Adam Fox. I would argue
it's Igor Shesterkin.
That too. Yeah, you could argue it's Igor.
In terms of, like, a skater.
Yeah.
I think it's Fox. I think when the Rangers are really at their best, Fox is out there orchestrating it, whether it's at 5-on-5 or on the power play. And he looks like one of the five best hockey players in the world. I would say Fox is their guy. I mean, you see him do it every now and then where they'll regroup a loose puck in the neutral zone. He'll recover it. He'll look around to be like, no one? Okay, I'll do it. And he'll drive to the net and set someone up or take the look himself. I think that's something that I'm doing a dive on Lindgren, and I'm trying to get a better understanding of what he's struggling with specifically in his game. But I think that's been a real damper on how I feel about the defense, at least, because the last couple of years that pair's been academic. You know what you're going to get. Fox, especially as we get closer to the playoffs, those minutes are going to tick up and you're going to feel good about it. But this year, that's really been a struggle. And I'll open it back up a little bit wider as we wrap up the conversation here. As far as the path for the Rangers, you mentioned you don't think winning the division matters all that much because the wildcard teams, you know, the Flyers, the Red Wings, those teams have very clear holes. You could even throw the Islanders in there who may or may not make a little push here. Is there anyone other than Florida that you feel gives the Rangers a real matchup issue?
Toronto would be the other one.
Okay.
I think they just, every time you see them play, like, it just never feels like the Rangers are comfortable in those games. Like, I think most other teams in the East, like, you see them play these games and they at least look like they're pretty comfortable with. Like, even Tampa, who I think is by far the best of those kind of wild card area teams. They're the team that the Rangers don't just look comfortable when they play. And I think part of that is the volatility of the Leafs, right? Like, they could go out there and they could just score 6 goals kind of on any night and no one would really be shocked if Matthews has a hat trick and Nylander scores 2. And but at the same time, like, if those guys aren't scoring, and like, we can make all the Leafs playoff jokes we want, like, those guys stop scoring, maybe the goaltending's not there, like, okay, it's one of those series that I don't think anyone would really be shocked if either team won in 5 games, right? Like, the Leafs could just get super hot for 5 games and kind of beat anybody. At the same time, like, that scoring's not there, maybe the goaltending's not there, like, they could get swept or something pretty easily. So they're the one that kind of scares me. I mean, Florida, we mentioned, obviously is a juggernaut, but it's like, I like the matchup with the Canes. I like the way they match up with Boston right now. I like the way they match up with really any of those East teams. I mean, for a while, the one exception was the Devils. I kind of figured they would get a goalie, but now that seems like it's not really going to happen. I mean, if I had to say another team there that maybe worries me a little bit, I think it would be the Islanders. And at this point, like, they're going to add players. Like, I think Lamoureux actually came out and said it recently.
Yeah.
Like, they're just not going to sit on this team. And it's like, if they go out and they get maybe a Vladimir Tarasenko or something to kind of help them score some goals, like, their issue this year hasn't really been generating offense. It's been on the other end. So I think if they're kind of able to kind of help beef up scoring a little bit. Like, yeah, that maybe could help a little bit, kind of give them an extra scorer there. Like, maybe they do go out and get a defenseman at some point.
Noah Hanifin to the Islanders would be funny. Like, that would be interesting.
That would help them. That would actually help them.
Of course it would help them. Yeah. Would Lou do that is a whole different conversation. But that, like, that would make them suddenly, like, oh, okay, we have to actually worry about this team now kind of deal.
Yeah, and it's like, when I kind of look at that tier, like, I have the Islanders right now basically in a tier with all other playoff slash likely. Like, I have them in the same group, and this is the largest group I have, as Tampa Bay, as Detroit, as Minnesota, as Nashville, as Seattle. Like, I kind of have them in there with all these borderline playoff teams. Like, I think they're better than the Penguins and the Flyers and the Devils than the Capitals, like all those other teams, right? Like, to me, the Islanders are a pretty decent step ahead of all of them. And I think when you mentioned Hanifin, like, I look at that, and not only does that make them a lot better right away, like, I think you could argue that he'd instantly be their second best defenseman. But you just look at all the teams that they'd be taking him away from. And I think that's the other thing when you look at the deadline is like, okay, obviously it's great to get a guy, but you mentioned the Rangers with Jake Guentzel. If they get Jake Guentzel, they're taking Jake Guentzel away from potentially going to Carolina, a team that probably needs that fit a little more than we do. And I looked at this last week when the Flames got, or the Stars got Tanev. Is like, yes, great fit in Dallas. I think that was the exact hole they had. But they also took Tanev away from potentially going to, and I don't think he was ever actually going to go to Edmonton, but they took him away from maybe going to Toronto, or maybe going to, I don't think Vegas was seriously a contender, but maybe in LA, like someone else that they may have to go up against, and now did not get that big ad that you just did. So Hanifin's certainly kind of the big one that I think everyone's waiting to see where the shoe drops. Personally, I think he actually ends up in Florida. I think they kind of swing big there. Like, and especially when you look at that cap situation, like, how often do you look at it and see that the best team in the NHL is in a position to add more than most teams right now? And it's like, you kind of see that half their team's about to be free agents. They're going to take a big swing here. Whether maybe it's Hanifin, like, maybe it is Jake Guentzel. Like, they could certainly go out and get one of these big names at this point. But I don't know. I would be certainly afraid of playing the Islanders, especially if they got Hanifin. Like, the Sorokin has not been necessarily great this year. Like, I think you'd probably expect him to be a little better. And certainly he has gotten better as he's gotten a little more rest now with Varlamov back. But that's a team that's certainly going to add. If they kind of add another defenseman in there, like, that is a team that would worry me.
All right. To wrap up here. In that top tier, you mentioned three teams. Is there any way any of the teams in that tier below could get up there by the end of the regular season? Is there something you're looking for from that next year down to really get into that upper echelon?
So I think there's a couple. So I think the Rangers will be up there if they can add a good first line forward in that number three center. I think it depends on who they bring. I really don't think Petrano is that fit this year. Like, as much as everyone likes him and wants to have him back, and he kind of went on that heater, like, they need someone that kind of brings the attributes that we've actually seen be successful on that line outside of shooting percentage. So I think if they do that, like, you look at their lineup and it is pretty solid compared to some of those other teams. The other one I look at is Carolina. And what interests me about them is, yes, not only could they add maybe someone like Jake Guentzel when they badly need a scorer, but what is their goaltending situation going to be like? Are they going to get back a Freddie Anderson who's maybe playing well and now has been very, very, very rested, obviously for a lot of reasons? But it's like, that could kind of push them up into that one. And then the only other team that I say I could move up there would be Colorado. I think it's very interesting to see what they do. Obviously, for a while, it was they're going to get Elias Lindholm. They're going to get Elias Lindholm. Now Lindholm's gone, but they're not just going to sit there and twiddle their thumbs. Like, they still have a really, really good team. Like, they just smacked Dallas the other night, and I think Dallas is honestly a better team than them. But it's like, do they maybe make a push for someone like a Jake Guentzel? Because they're in the need of a little bit more offense, as that is to actually say. Like, I don't really think they need to add anything on the back end at this point. Like, maybe a third pair kind of guy, but if they could get a Jake Gensel or a Mantha or a Tarasenko, like, I think that moves the needle for them quite a bit. Those are really the three. Like, the other team I have in that tier is Winnipeg. I just don't know if they're going to get to that upper tier because I do think that they lack some depth.
All right. That'll just about do it for this Liberty Blue conversation. Want to thank Matt for stopping by the show. Andrew and I will see you guys real soon. Make sure you are subscribed wherever you get your podcast. Drop a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify. Subscribe over on YouTube. Like the video. We'll see you guys soon.
Later.